there's so much evil out there and different evil agendas that they sometimes intersect, and you can get confusion.
Yes.
As far as, and you can get like a sort of a cause, what's that word? A dissonance, you know, where you're not even. It seems like something's happening, and it's not happening. In the case of terrorism, there is a look. The thing is that I mentioned before, talking specifically about Islamic jihad terrorism, you know, most people woke up to this on 9/11 and the first time they heard about this. You know, I mentioned 100 years ago, I lost about 100 family members to basically the same thing. This has been going on for 14 centuries within the Islamic religion. I'm not one to condemn anybody's religion. We're talking about something, the phenomenon within that religion that unquestionably is has worked through you know, intimidation and violence for centuries, and that's how it has spread, and it's going on now. But in terms of information that you get from the government and the media, you always have to be a skeptical. And I think skeptical is a good word. Cynical is not a good word. Cynical means if you're cynical, somebody can be telling you the truth, but you're just so negative, you're not even going to believe it.
Exactly.
Skeptical is a healthy thing. You just, you know, you're not really denying it, but you're saying, well, prove it. How do you mean?
I want more information before I agree with you. That's a skeptic, and that you're right. It is healthy. You talk about the Stockholm syndrome. What is that?
Well, I bring up the Stockholm syndrome in the context of talking about terrorism, because you know 9/11 was almost 10 years ago, and I still don't feel like we really got a good handle on this. And so I'm using Stockholm syndrome. It's more than a metaphor, but I'm using it to kind of bring attention to a certain dynamic that works in the Stockholm syndrome, what I'm saying is that I think that we in the West have a kind of a low-grade fever of the Stockholm syndrome. Let me remind people what the Stockholm syndrome is. I think most people remember it was named after the Swedish bank robbery in 1973, where these two low-life criminals, Jan Erik Olsen and a buddy, they tried to rob a bank. They terrorized these four hostages, three women and one man, in the bank vault for 5.5 days. They didn't treat them very well. They were tied to chairs. They had nooses tied around their necks. They had firearms trained on them for days. It wasn't fun. And yet, the hostages inexplicably became more and more sympathetic toward the captors until by the time they were finally rescued, and these, you know, they were rescued, the guys went to trial, the four hostages totally sided with the captors and against the police that were trying to rescue them.
Jeez.
They raised money for the defense of these guys. They refused to testify against them. And so the name for the syndrome went to something that really law enforcement psychologists have known about for decades before it had a name. They've wondered, why is it that battered women who call the police, when the police come, they turn against the police and side with this boyfriend who just tried to kill them? And basically, I think it's kind of simple. The core idea of it is that when we are really, really seriously intimidated, and we're talking in a life-threatening way, some of us start to side with whoever or whatever is intimidating us. And it's, you know, it can be psychologically complex, and a lot's been written about it, but the bottom line is it's a survival response that relieves the pressure and the threat and the danger by giving in and siding with the bigger, badder, and stronger player.
Good point. It's almost like the Patty Hearst syndrome as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and in fact, in the chapter in How Evil Works is called How Terrorism Really Works. I go through a lot of these big cases that break up into the news cycle, because I am a newsman, and I tell the story of Patty Hearst and Elizabeth Smart, and J.C. Dugard was really after the book came out, but that's another good example. These are I go into the most detail into Patty Hearst. This is a bizarre thing. I mean, everybody remembers it. The famous newspaper heiress. She's 19, you know, protected little girl. She's kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army. Brutalized. I mean, awful. Locked in the trunk of a car. Gang raped. Made to live in a little closet for 2 months. Indoctrinated with all kinds of wacky ideology they're teaching.
And metaphors, yeah.
Yes, and then, you know, a couple months later, she turns up in a bank surveillance video helping to knock off a bank in San Francisco.
I remember at the time, David, people were trying to theorize, well, look, there's another gun pointed at her. They're forcing her to do this.
They didn't get it.
They didn't get it.
And the Attorney General of the United States, I can't remember his name, but he said, oh, you know, she was a willing participant. She's a common criminal. And she was, in fact, convicted, sentenced to 35 years. That was lowered to 7 years later. But she was given 35 or 25 years for bank robbery and 10 for weapons. And we say, wait a minute. This is a 19-year-old kid who has been brutalized. And the thing is that Jay Lifton, who was a famous expert in Mao Zedong brainwashing, thought control, Chinese thought control, he was a star defense witness. He did a great job, but somehow they still lost because we just didn't understand why it was that she held up the bank or that Elizabeth Smart, you know, why do these kids not run away when their captor is in the 7-Eleven or whatever? And we say, well, they had the chance to run away. We don't get it, George. They are bonded to these people at that point. You can overwhelm somebody's brain. And listen, if this happens to soldiers that have been, you know, trained to deal with these kind of pressures, if it happens to them in brainwashing situations, then I think little girls who we're talking about with all these cases, we can't expect them to be able to handle it. You put so much horrendous pressure on them, you can get them, like I said before, to basically switch sides. And what we have to understand is it's not just a tactical thing. Well, I'll play along, you know, with them so that I don't get hurt. It may start that way. But we're talking about where they actually bond. J.C. Dugard, the girl who was, raped every day for 18 years, a horrible, horrible story.
Oh, yeah.
This girl recently, her diary was released, and her father says she still is very bonded to this rapist. She was afraid of hurting him, and it's very, very sad. But we got to realize that our minds are kind of fragile. They're not indestructible. They're not just machines. And if you put enough pressure and enough manipulative pressures on people over a period of time, you can flip them. And that's what's happened in these cases. So this is real life mind control. And it's real. It's not just something in the science fiction stories. It's quite real. And we need to understand it because, as I said, the reason I got onto the subject was terrorism. Not just talking about the J.C. Dugards and the Patty Hearsts, but all of us that we seem to be incapable of dealing with the intense pressure because, radical Islam is very intimidating. You know, you're talking about, cutting people's heads off and, terrorist attacks. We had this thing in Times Square last night. It's intimidating. And if, some people, not everybody, but some people, the way they respond to that, this is all unconscious, okay, is they end up siding with it, agreeing with it, starting to think, well, they do have a point because America has this and that. And this is not to say America has been perfect in all its foreign policy, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about actually agreeing and sympathizing with people that would, go into a pizza parlor and kill, 20 or 30 innocent people. And it's the psychological survival mechanism where the pressure causes some of us to start to agree with and to sympathize with the source of the pressure.